Hi, I'm Jared Sebesta, host of Repurposed. Thank you so much for downloading this podcast.
If you want to find a solution for your community, you don't have to be one of those people of power. Be a person of influence. Walk through your day and ask yourself all the time, what is one little thing I can do to make this community better?
Hey everybody, and welcome to Repurposed. I'm your host, Jared Sebesta of Taichus Financial Group. We are a retirement planning firm based in West Central Minnesota, where we teach and inspire what we call true wealth. And we believe that there are three components to true wealth. Number one, living with purpose. Number two, having impact on the people around us. And number three, leaving a legacy. If you want more information on our firm, you can check us out anytime online at taichusfinancial.com. Well, on this episode of Repurposed, I'm bringing you a conversation I had with a guy by the name of Doug Griffiths. Now, Doug authored a book and a presentation called 13 Ways to Kill a Community, and he travels all over North America giving this presentation, helping communities grow and thrive. Now, Doug believes that the most important job on earth is actually building the community around us, and in this podcast, he's going to give us insight on how we can do that. And we don't have to be necessarily a person in extreme power in our communities, but rather we need to be individual people of influence. Here's my conversation with Doug Griffiths. All right, I got Doug Griffiths on the phone here today. Doug, thank you so much for taking time out of your really busy schedule and joining me on the show here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Gary.
So you travel a lot. In fact, I'm just catching you at a quick brief stop at home before you're back on the road. But you travel all over the continent and do speaking and presentations on really building better communities. Talk about that.
Yeah, I wrote a book called 13 Ways to Kill Your Community, which sort of arose out of my time in politics and my work on building communities. And, you know, I don't even sell the book in bookstores, but word of mouth seems to carry. And I've been everywhere from Ontario to Kansas, and it seems like everywhere in between. And there are a lot of people that are worried about the future of their communities and want to talk about it. So,
yeah, you're based in Canada, but your background is in politics. Talk about how that all got started and what led you to kind of leave your career in politics.
Yeah, I don't know if my background is so much in politics. My background is in community building. I was a rancher and a farmer and a junior high school teacher, and I ranched in one town and taught in another and lived in the one in between. And just one day I had this realization that all three of the communities I was involved in were losing population. Young people were leaving. They were just slowly dying. And I thought, we need to do something. And I shot my mouth off about the need for a community development strategy, and that's how I got into politics. So, and I spent 13 years there, and then I left on purpose. I didn't lose any election or anything, and I left on purpose to go back to community building because I still think that is the single most important job on earth.
Yeah. Are you from a small community? Is that kind of your primary forte, or you get a little bit of everything?
We get a little bit of everything, but Probably most of the communities I speak in and the clients that hire us to do work with them to help with strategic planning and economic development strategies and stuff are, you know, they wouldn't be much over 100,000 people, but anything below that is game. And probably our most common clients are between, you know, 3,000 and 30,000 people.
Sure. Sure. The name of your book and the name of your presentation is 13 Ways to Kill a Community. How did you come up with that? Did you just come up with 13, or was there a specific list, or how did you really develop all of these talking points? Was that just your background in politics and what you've seen in community development?
The first job I got in politics was to write a provincial community development strategy, which is what I campaigned on. So I did that. And then, I would talk about, you know, healthcare, education, community infrastructure, economic development, youth, seniors, tourism, arts and culture, water, wastewater, infrastructure, housing, all of those elements that were needed to make communities stronger. And then I realized a lot of the communities I would go talk to and work with while I was a politician were unwittingly sabotaging their own success, more importantly, probably not realizing how their attitudes about the challenges they were facing were sabotaging their success. Mm-hmm. And I was being a a teacher, I would go talk to high school students about how to be successful. And I'd tell them, study hard, don't do drugs, and marry someone nice. And they'd all look at me like, yeah, I know, my mom told me that this morning. But they didn't change what they were doing. So I changed my approach, and I would ask them to describe what it would look like if they ruined their lives. You know, and they'd say things like, well, I guess I'd be a drug addict when I'm 40 years old. And I'd say, great, let's pretend that's your goal. How would you start today to get there? And someone would say, I'd smoke a joint after school, and two kids would turn red because that's what they did yesterday. And suddenly they had the realization that there were consequences to the way they approached their problems. And communities are the same way. Every community I've been to has a tourism plan and a marketing plan and an infrastructure plan and a strategic plan and an economic development plan. But I see them do things that sabotage their own success. So I started to write them down. And first, I think it was 10, and then it was 15, and then it was back to 12. And it sort of settled on 13, and I didn't think about how that would look until someone said, oh, yeah, that's a good number if you're going to try and kill your community, right? Bad luck number, bad luck situation. And so I continued to flesh it out with 13 ways.
Yeah, that's a cool way to look at it. And I love how you kind of reverse engineer the process there, you know, develop an end goal and say, okay, this is where we want to be, good or bad. How would you go about it? You know, as you go through your 13, is there one point that like is – tends to be the most important? Is there one that sticks out to you kind of more than the others?
People ask me which is the most powerful one, but every single one of them, any one of them alone can destroy a community. So I think there are ones that are a little more common than others in communities. But you know, I don't name names in the book. When I do the presentation, I don't name the names of the communities, because I found when I name the names, people go, oh yeah, I know that community, and they're idiots. But when I didn't name names, they would say, did you write that about us? Because you wrote exactly what we did.
Right.
And
right.
They see themselves in it. So I probably the last one, the chapter 13, is a big one, and one of the most common, and it's don't take responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I find that that's what we do a lot. We used to go to church 20 years ago and pray to God for a miracle. And now we show up at the town office and demand one by Friday from the mayor or the administration or somebody. And we don't realize they're only responsible for the municipal corporation. If you want your community to be successful, it takes every single person in it to make that commitment and work hard for it. Communities don't build themselves.
Have you seen that shift in the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years? And certainly not suggesting it has, but do you see a different attitude or maybe just posture of community involvement and service? You know, what was that more prevalent in different generations where people were more willing to stand up and say, hey, you know, this is happening in our community. We're not going to let it stand. Can you speak into that just a little bit? Or have you seen that over maybe the last period of time?
I've heard about it, but I don't know that I've actually witnessed it, because every generation has people that are community builders. And once they're community builders, they will always be community builders. The challenge we have is that for the last two generations, those community builders created the Elks and the Rotary and they joined clubs, and they would volunteer in the community. And their numbers are shrinking, and those organizations are dying, and people are saying, oh, we can't get any volunteers to help anymore. But it's really just a misunderstanding of what millennials and the I generation that comes after them are looking for. They're growing the gig economy. Their whole mindset is that they don't want to belong to a company for 50 years and work to be vice president, and then, you know, they finally get listened to, and then they get given a gold watch and they go up and die. They want to focus on the problems and find solutions to those problems. And it's the same in communities. They would rather volunteer to clean up Main Street. They would volunteer to plant trees. They would volunteer to build a playground. They would volunteer for all sorts of projects, the gigs, but they don't necessarily want to have to show up for a meeting every Thursday for an organization. They think differently, but that doesn't mean that they're not focused on community. They are actually, I think, millennials, for many reasons, are going to be some of the biggest community builders we've seen in generations.
Sure. And that's what I like about your message. You know, you hit on some, Like, for example, I believe one of your points, especially in the beginning, is have clean water. But from an individual standpoint, I think you do a really good job of really, you know, hitting everybody. And a lot of people say, you know, the older generation is, you know, they're upset at the younger kids, and the kids are saying, we're the up and comers. But I think, like, you know, you really, you know, speak into, we need everybody. We need the older generation, and we need the younger generation, but we need us to work together and use our best strengths. Talk about some of your points, and then speak into that kind of multi-generational usage of the people within a community.
Yeah, Chapter 3 is about youth, and Chapter 8 is about, I don't even like to call them seniors, because they don't like to be called seniors. They're just retired or semi-retired now, but again, it's the mindset. So I've seen lots of communities, they do a strategic plan and they put in there, we need to engage young people, and they put it in their strategic plan and everyone's really excited. And then 4 years later, they review it and they realize they didn't do anything and they don't know how to do it. Right. And in the meantime, I tell a story when I do the presentation. I was in a community, and everyone always asked me the same question. How do we get young people to stay in our community? And I tell them that's the wrong approach. The nature of youth is to go off and explore, to go learn new things, to go try new things, to meet new people, gather new ideas. The key to your success is not to keep them. It's to give them a reason to come home after they've gone exploring. But we don't not only not give them a reason to come home, we chase them out of town. I mean, almost every community I've been to, they want to keep young people, but they don't. In fact, they spend half of their time chasing them out of town, and they don't even realize it. So they have conversations in the coffee shops and the community events saying, oh, you know, if you want success, you got to go to the city. If all the technology's in the city. If you're going to do business, you're going to be in the city. I mean, in my community, I was raised to believe I was going to go work in the oil patch if I wanted money, take over the farm if I was going to stay home. But I was one of those smart kids, and so, oh, you're going to go off to the city. You have to if you're going to be successful. But those are the same people that sit around and say, what are we going to do to get young people to come home, when they spend half of their time convincing those young people they need to leave if they're going to have a future? You see what I mean about the mindset? We want one thing, but our actions and our words do the exact opposite of our intent.
Yeah. How do you, yeah. You said that you had to give them a reason to come back. Their instinct is to go explore and find the world. How do you create an environment to want to get them back? What do you do as kind of the middle-aged and older generations do that?
Well, there are lots of, most people say, oh, what's the magic bullet solution? What's the one big thing we can do to fix it? Except there's never one big thing that can fix your economy or address the youth issue. So I tell them it takes a million little things to make them, those young people, believe you want them to come home. And I've seen communities that have, you know, they don't call it a youth dance, but they have a dance specifically, or a weekend. They kind of grew it from the dance to a reunion every year, where all the kids that went off to university or to start businesses are kept on a newsletter and constantly communicated with and encouraged to come back with all sorts of incentives about having a good time, bringing your family, bringing your kids back to the community once a year after they've gone. And I mean, deliberately making them feel like they're wanted and they're needed and they're appreciated. And then they market to them. They're like, we have high-speed internet. We have a great school. Don't forget that. I remember you went through this school. It was wonderful. And they constantly keep up that connection. And then those younger people. And I mean, when I say dance, they weren't having a dance for people under 18. They were having one they consider youth under 40, those young families. And so they were constantly keeping engaged, and it worked. There's another community that, the mayor and the head of the Chamber of Commerce got all the permissions they needed to, but they met with the grade 12 students every single year. They interviewed every single one of them with all the permissions to find out what they wanted to do. And if they had a job in mind, they tried to put all the jobs together every year and see if there was some company they could attract that would create some of those jobs. So those young people, even if they left, they could come back because those jobs would be available in a few years. Right. If they wanted to be an entrepreneur, the Chamber of Commerce got together and created a micro lending program for those young people and some mentorship. And they built a co-working space so that those young entrepreneurs would have a place to be and a place to get mentorship. And if they found someone that wanted to be a professional, they had partnered with a couple other communities and bought a duplex near a university. And the mayor told me they found their dentist that way. Oh. She was a young lady that wanted to be a dentist. And they said, hey, you can go live in this building that we've got and go to school. You'll have your living cost of living for free if you promise to come back and work as a dentist, because they needed a new one. It was a town was 5,000 people and they desperately needed another dentist. And she said, no, of course. So they went and talked to her parents and they said, you're damn right, you're going to go live there for free. School is expensive.
Right.
And she met the man of her dreams and they fell in love and they got married. And then she came back and not only worked for dentists for a couple of years, but set up her own practice. And when I interviewed her, she said it was the most amazing thing in the world. She would have not thought about going back to that town if it wasn't for that connection. And that mayor alone in those 12 years as being mayor helped grow that community from just under 5,000 people to over 10,000 people, just with the strategy of keeping youth connected and reminding them there's a reason to come home.
And I think that you talk about how that generational impact is really important for a community, because you say it takes several generations for somebody to say that they're actually, you know, there, and it helps create that foundation. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it takes three generations from all the research I did for people to be considered local, an insider in the community. And I was speaking in Eastern Canada, and I mean, we have names for outsiders. Every community is different, but down east, they call them come from a ways. They don't even hide it. Sorry about that.
You have a wife and kids and a dog, obviously, which is totally fine.
Yeah. They actually call them come from a ways. And when I was talking to her, she said, I'm an outsider here. And I asked her to describe what was like, what it meant. She said, they say things like, you don't understand how we do things around here. You don't get our history. You're not one of us. And I said, that's tough. And then I asked her, how long have you lived in town? And she said, 26 years. It was crazy. And then, so the research I did indicated that you actually, to be considered an insider, a local, your parents need to be born in town.
Wow.
And where's the value in that? I mean, the credentials for being an insider is that, you were born in the town. That's not a credential, and that's not wisdom. That's a birth certificate. That doesn't make you any more aware. And yet outsiders pick, when they move to your community, they did it on purpose. They actually deliberately decided they wanted to grow your community, and that they're investing their lives and their future in the future of your community. So they're incredibly powerful.
Yeah, that is a really good point. Talk about, maybe that quote unquote older generation for a second. This podcast is really, it's called Repurpose because it's based on a book, which is really about redefining your purpose once you retire. And we believe as a company here, and as a point of this podcast, is really that retirees now have the potential of having the greatest impact than any other season of a person's life for a number of reasons. You have the most margin. You probably have the most financial stability. How can retirees or people, in that season of life, plug into communities and make it better, from your perspective and your experience?
Yeah. When we get this, there's this sort of idea that when people turn 65, they're labeled seniors and they're about to go off and die. They're not. They're about to live.
Right.
They don't have to work the two jobs and tie skates at skating and coach hockey and put the chairs away at church and all those things. They're looking for a quality of life. And I mean, they're not all wealthy, but they do have resources. They've been saving up for that. And I don't name names of communities that are failing, but I like to identify ones that are doing some things right. And you've got Lancaster, Pennsylvania, that I encourage anyone to look at and do some research about. They're in the Rust Belt, of course, and their economy was in the dumps, and there was a downturn, and they were kind of frustrated and wondering what they were going to do. And they regrouped and thought, a lot of young people have left, all going to find jobs somewhere else. So let's service the seniors. That's the biggest percentage of the population. So they did things to enhance the quality of life, golf carts around town and farmers markets and walking trails and recreation associated with seniors. And that made seniors brag, because lots of the seniors that were there would go in the winter months to Arizona and Florida and places like that.
Right.
And they discovered that they would go brag about how Lancaster, Pennsylvania was so focused on their needs. So they found lots of seniors that were wintering in Arizona and Florida and California decided to move from their summer place, their hometown, to Lancaster because of the quality of life. And that grew their economy, and they refurbished downtown. And now they have young professionals of Lancaster who have a booming young entrepreneurial base who are going there and opening businesses to service seniors. Like, that people think seniors are a cost to the economy. They are one of the strongest economic drivers. And if you focus just on them, you can find ways to revitalize your community. Mm-hmm. Lancaster, Pennsylvania did it. It's not Phoenix, and it's not, Florida. It's cold winter months, and yet they're the number one place in the United States for seniors to go to retire.
Yeah, and again, I love your message, because you're not talking about it's just seniors or just millennials. It's really them working together, where the younger generation, so to speak, sows into the older generation and vice versa. And I think that's, again, a big characteristic of a healthy community from what I've heard from your content. And I think that that's a really great point. We've got about 2-3 minutes left. You know, what can I do? You know, I'm 40 years old. I live in a smaller community of 25,000 people. What should be my attitude? Do I just start getting involved in politics, or join a board? Like, what's something more tangible that myself and our listeners can do?
So, we often think we have to take on a leadership role in politics, but I deliberately left politics because it was one of the hardest places to focus on community building, because there was too much politics going on. I remind people all of the time that instead of, if you want to find a solution for your community, you don't have to be one of those people of power. Be a person of influence, and pick, walk through your day and ask yourself all the time, what is one little thing I can do to make this community better? And it could be anything from, being more friendly, going over, and that new couple that moved to town, go invite them over for a barbecue, go see what their kids like to do and connect them with some sports and recreation. There's a gentleman who went on Twitter, and I forget the hashtag that he posted, but it was just about cleaning up your community. But it wasn't just his community. They had hundreds upon hundreds of young people, and this was organized by high school students, who went, joined the hashtag and showed pictures of them with garbage bags where they just did a main street cleanup or a community cleanup or park. You just do something. It doesn't have to be a big magic bullet or a million-dollar project. It doesn't have to cost any money. It just has to cost some time and some consideration. And that's why, if we focused on, I think community building is the most important job on earth. And if we focused our time on that, leadership would be successful, and businesses would be profitable, and families could take care of themselves and each other. We all need to look around the neighborhood we live in and say, what's one thing I can do, a little thing I can do today to make my neighborhood better?
Yeah,
and you'll see remarkable change.
That's some phenomenal advice, and I think that's something really tangible that we can all do. And I would have to assume that when you go into these communities and cities, there's an element of that within the people that you have to see. So I think that is some phenomenal advice. Again, we got about 30 seconds left. Why don't you give everybody a place where they can find you online and maybe check out more on your presentation and your book?
Yeah, our website is 13ways.ca, 13ways.ca. And on the website, there are links to videos, to our social media, where you can see the presentation. I mean, there's clips of it all over the place. I have 70 or 75 columns I've written that are regular blogs that people are free to download and put in their local newspapers to help instigate change. And there's a list of all the sorts of tools and resources we have available. In fact, there's a community assessment tool. It's a 50-question questionnaire you go through, and it helps you assess your community. There's lots of tools available. The book's available there too. And if you ever, anyone has a question, just drop me a line.
You bet. And the presentation is phenomenal. You came to our community, and unfortunately I had another meeting. I couldn't make it, but some coworkers and friends went, and they said it was phenomenal. And again, I've watched it online, and I encourage people to go check it out. Great stuff. Doug, thank you so much for your time today. Keep up the great work, and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Jared. Anytime. You keep up the great work too.
See you. Well, I sure hope you enjoyed this conversation with Doug Griffiths, the author of the book, 13 Ways to Kill a Community. He said this podcast, Building Better Communities, just takes time and consideration, and you don't have to be a person of power, meaning in a government position, but you do have to be a person of influence, and that goes down to the neighborhood level. I think that's a great challenge for us today, especially as believers. We are called to be light of this world, and we can all do that with the people around us, and I think that's a great challenge for us to hear today. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Repurposed. As usual, just a reminder, this show is based on a book by Ben Tages called Repurposed. If you are 55 years or older, you need to get a copy of this book. If you want the first two chapters of this book totally free, go to our website, tagesfinancial.com. Click on Heard Us on the Radio, little button in the upper right-hand corner of your screen. Click on that, and I will send you the first two chapters of Repurposed to your inbox totally free, just as a free gift for listening here today. Also, a big thanks to Faith Radio for helping us sponsor this program. If you missed any or all of this episode, visit myfaithradio.com to hear or download the podcast there. I'm Jared Sebesta. We'll see you next time on Repurposed. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast of Repurposed. This media is only available because of listener support just like you. If you want to make a gift right now, you can go to the website, myfaithradio.com. And if you do that, we would appreciate that so much. Also, thanks in advance for sharing these podcasts with your friends online. It's an easy way to help spread the impact of Repurposed. And just one more thing, subscribe. You can find Repurposed on iTunes or your favorite podcast player.